Welcome to The Food Fix, where we talk with innovators who are figuring out how to better feed the world. I'm your host, Casey Wurst. Plastic is used for food packaging because it is widely available and cheap. However, some plastics are not recyclable and can contaminate the environment. This has led to a push for the creation of food packaging that can break down safely and naturally. These packages keep food fresh, protect the environment, and can be used as fertilizer. Chris Wilson, a master's student in the School of Packaging at Michigan State University, studies how to make food packaging safe and more environmentally friendly. His research could impact food security around the globe. He spoke with Ali Hussein, a reporter for The Food Fix.
Hi, Chris, and welcome to The Food Fix.
Thanks, Ali. I'm happy to be here.
Why is food packaging important?
So I would say that food packaging is important because it is a way of preserving food for a later time. When packaging was first come up with, you were looking at people storing their food in some kind of jars, storing it deep in the ground in places where they knew they could preserve it for later. You know, we started using barrels, we started using amphoras, all these traditional sorts of packaging.
What is the connection between food packaging and achieving food security?
So packaging is going to show up in any kind of food security equation once a society has reached a point that they need to preserve their food for a longer period of time. In a current context, you're looking at that through modern food supply chains. So when forces such as urbanization and dietary transitions of people towards eating more meats and fresh fruits and vegetables, things that are highly perishable, we tend to look to food packaging technology at that point to preserve that food from the time that is produced on a farm or wherever your food is being sourced from until it makes it to a consumer, possibly in some distant city. We ship food all over the world now, and food packaging is one of the primary ways of making sure that that food makes it all the way to its intended recipient and reaches there to high enough quality that that person's going to want to eat it and not just toss it in the garbage.
Tell us a bit about your research.
What my research group has worked on in terms of biodegradable materials is, on one hand, trying to find new materials that we can use to make plastics. You can make plastics from proteins, you can make plastics from starches, you can make plastics from lipids and fats. There's lots of different stuff you can use to make a packaging material. And so one of the things that my research group investigates are new materials that we can use for packaging purposes. How can we take those materials and translate it into a packaging context and see if they are really effective at extending the shelf life of food? What I personally do is I take materials and combine them with other packaging technologies, such as modified atmosphere packaging technology, and see how do these packages perform when placed with a food product, and let's give it a real use scenario so that people in industry can see this is how it works in the kind of situation that I'm actually going to use it in, so that they can consider, is this actually a technology that's worth me investing in? And our hope is that we can convince them that adopting these novel and more advanced packaging technologies is actually a benefit to their business and not just an unneeded stress.
Why is plastic the most widely used material for food packaging?
Plastics are nice from one perspective in that they are very inexpensive. To make a plastic bottle as opposed to a glass bottle, you use very little raw material. You also have the advantage that it is lighter weight, which means people can pick it up easier. You can ship it across the country in a truck for less, or it requires less gasoline to be burned along that run. People also like plastics because you can see through them. You can see what product is inside. They've got a nice gloss to them. You can print some graphics on there, make it look nice. People appreciate plastics for these types of reasons. It's a very flexible packaging format in that you can do a lot of different things with it. Plastics are kind of an umbrella for a wide variety of materials. There are rigid plastics, there are flexible plastics, there are lots and lots of different kinds, and they can see very diverse usage because of that.
What is not right about using plastic for food packaging?
Plastic garbage is very evident. If you walk through New York City, you can see plastic bags flying like little flags on top of most of the trees as you're going through town. While plastic is a very efficient material to use because you're using so little, the waste is still very evident. So even if there's not a lot of waste there, just the little bit there is highly visible, and people notice it, and people are like, gosh, that looks terrible. I don't want to see that. And so the question becomes, what does an industry do where its lifeblood is making bags, but those bags are becoming a problem in terms of their visibility as waste? Even if they are efficient at containing food, preventing food waste, all the energy that's gone into that process, they are unsightly.
So what is biodegradable food packaging?
Biodegradable food packaging is any type of packaging that can be degraded at the end of its life down into smaller, more raw materials. Take it from a sheet of plastic down into small little bits, and ideally into small enough little bits that they don't get stuck all over the environment. I'd like to make a key distinction between bio-based packaging and biodegradable packaging. On one hand, you have bio-based packaging, which is any kind of packaging that is made from a biomaterial. So you're looking at things like paper, for instance, is bio-based packaging. It's made from trees. We have some novel new materials that we're making from things like mushrooms and agricultural waste and a whole variety of other materials that are bio-based. On the other hand, you have biodegradable materials, which is a material that can be broken down at the end of its life into small little bits. The real golden question in packaging is, what is the benefit to these types of materials? So if we take a conventional plastic package and I put it in a landfill or a compost pile, it's more than likely going to stay there. There are only a few things that really start breaking down plastics. Plastics will start to slightly degrade out in the sun because the UV rays will turn. You can see bottles turning yellow from that. But that's not really degrading it. It's degrading its quality, but it's not breaking it down into anything special for us. What we would like to have in a packaging material, ideally, is something that we can take through a more natural process at the end of its life. Right now, from a total sustainability perspective, if you look at the amount of energy that is put into a system and the amount of energy that we get out at the end of its life, the most efficient thing to do with a lot of plastic packaging is just to throw it in the landfill rather than to try to take it through these cool new biodegradation processes. That said, still as a form of trash doesn't look good, and we would like to move away from that over the course of its lifespan.
How perishable food items respond to a plastic versus a bio-based food packaging?
Probably the biggest distinction right now that we have using bio-based plastics in packaging is that they tend to be very water sensitive. As you'd imagine, most bio-derived materials like water in one way or another, which is usually a good thing. It's usually one of those starting points for that biodegradation process at the end of its life, water softening it up a little bit. The problem with things being water sensitive is typically when we're using many packaging materials, we're trying to package things that are made of 90%+ water. You know, fruits and vegetables are almost all made out of water. Liquids are always water, of course. When you're packaging these things, you'd like that package to be stable through the whole shelf life of the product. And one of the big challenges confronting using bioplastics in packaging is, how can we make these stable for the whole duration of the shelf life of the product while simultaneously having it degrade fairly quickly once it hits end of life? That's a big challenge because you're expecting a turnkey in a package.
If plastic-based food packaging is such harmful for the environment, why is it still being used?
So I think you have a couple of approaches to this question. From an industry perspective, plastics are nice because of the reasons we mentioned earlier. Mostly they're inexpensive. That is the biggest benefit to these normal plastic materials. On the other hand, if you're looking at the environmental impact of them, while they're not degradable at the end of life, they still are a very efficient packaging material for a society that's dependent upon these very transient small goods. We're shipping small things all over the place, and we expect them to be going to last a long time. We're expecting a lot out of our products. Plastic is a very efficient material to use for this. The energy that it takes to make a plastic package is less. It takes less energy to ship it around than it would to ship big glass bottles of whatever we're up to. However, the trash problem is still something that we're trying to approach. And since these bio-based and biodegradable materials have presented themselves, there have been a number of times that industry has looked to adopt them. We have a variety of companies that are testing the waters in terms of getting these materials to market, because any new material, you've got to qualify it. If you're a packaging company and you're making 100 million bottles in your plant that are made out of plastic, are you going to want to go and redo the entire process that makes you money in order to use this new material that you're not actually sure if it's going to work or not right away? So you can understand why the industry is a little hesitant to hop on. But there have been a lot of advances from some companies that are innovating on new materials. There are a variety of bio-based plastics that have hit the markets and are starting to gain some traction in certain markets. Probably the most popular one for industry are bio-based versions of conventional plastics. So the normal plastics that have recycling numbers and you're familiar, make your grocery bags, they feel normal. But instead of making them from a petroleum resource, you're making them from bio-based materials. So you can make them from sugars and corn. You can make them from other sorts of basic building blocks. You can take those, do some chemistry to them to make normal building blocks of the polymer that instead of coming from oil are now coming from a food source.
What is stopping the shift to bio-based food packaging?
On one hand, the cost, making sure that those materials have a similar cost to materials that we currently use. And on the other hand, making sure that they are a good competitor, because a business isn't going to change their business model unless they see that they have a competitive advantage for doing so. In the case of bio-based plastics, you're looking at, will they be inexpensive enough that they can compete with normal plastics? And will they provide the material properties that I'm expecting? I mentioned earlier that this water sensitivity is a big issue, and making sure that those plastics are a good barrier to water vapor so that your product doesn't dry out during the course of its shelf life is a big challenge to bioplastics. And there have been a lot of innovations there to approach that issue.
How do you run a typical lab research to measure the effects of packaging material on food items?
So something that's really cool about the school packaging in general is that we're one of the few places in the world that actually cares about this whole life cycle of a packaging material. And so to start out, we would make a material. We'd collect whatever raw materials that we need, and we would try to figure out what kind of a processing method can we use to make this raw material into a packaging material. Does it make sense for us to thermoform it the way that you make normal, like rigid containers? Does it make sense for us to extrude it the way that you make film? Typically, labs will use things like solution casting. So you suspend it in a liquid, evaporate the liquid, and then whatever's left on the bottom is a piece of film. Industry's never going to use that, so we try to use methods that are actually used in commercial production to produce a material. After a lot of hacking to try to figure out the right blend of raw materials that will make a nice, good-feeling material, good-looking material, we'll start testing that through a variety of means to see how does it perform as a packaging material. We'll look at it from mechanical properties. So does it have some tensile strength to it? Does it feel brittle? Does it have some toughness to it? How does it behave mechanically? We'll also look at it from a thermal perspective. So when does it become rigid? When does it become more loosey-goosey? And then we'll also investigate it from the perspective of something like barrier properties. Is it a good barrier to water vapor? Is it a good barrier to oxygen? Does it have thermal stability? So over time, if I put it in an environment that's hot or cold, does it start warping or changing shape? Just to try to figure out what would this material be best for? What's the best way to make it? What's the best way to use it as a package? What kind of an environment can we use this in? Once we have a package that's useful, we can, at that point, try it out. We'd put some food product in, package it up, and test over time, how does that food product? At this point, it's very horticulture related. So horticulture, food microbiology, we're testing, how does this food product's shelf life, how is it affected by the way that we've packaged it, the way that we've built this system? And once we have some data from there, we can assess, is it better than the current packaging that we're using? What kind of technology can we pair this with to make it more effective? What kind of technologies does this really not work with? Because by the time you know things like barrier properties and things like that, you can take a guess. Maybe this is good for blueberries. Maybe it's better for something like cucumbers, because all these fresh products always have different requirements. Meat always wants very little oxygen going through. So you want to be very careful about what kind of materials you're using to package them. Just you don't want to accelerate the degradation of a product, you know? Once we've had all our fun figuring out what we can use this package for, our school has some very cool equipment that we've built to do end-of-life studies. So things like, is this biodegradable? If it is, under what conditions? How fast does it degrade? If we make this or this or this changes to the raw material, does it degrade faster or slower?
What have you found so far?
So one thing that the school did a few years ago is they ran a big biodegradation study. There were a number of people in some of the conventional plastics industries who have started companies that advertise biodegradation enhancing additives. So this is an additive that you can put into a normal conventional plastic and it'll help it biodegrade. We had some people in our school who thought that that sounded like wishful thinking rather than a good commercial promise. And so they took some samples. They put some of them in our fancy industrial composting setup at the school packaging. We took some samples and buried them in the ground, and we let them sit for over the course of a few years and watched over time, how did they degrade? And what the team ended up finding was that, yeah, these additives are wishful thinking. These are something that really aren't helping anyone at all. They're confusing people in industry to think that they can take all these existing processes that they have, add a little bit of fairy dust to it, and suddenly they can get these big green outcomes from it. While our school tries not to be just the bearers of bad news when it comes to that, and it's like, well, sorry, your fancy magic additive doesn't work. What we like to say is that we have produced some new materials that are competitive. We've produced really cool ways of adding stuff. So these bio-based materials aren't great with water. And so what we found, what a lot of research both at the school packaging and around the world has been working with, things like taking little tiny bits of clay So clay in riverbeds is often used as kind of like the water barrier there. We can grind that up to a nano size, put it into our packaging, and then it will serve as a water barrier in there as well. And these kinds of technologies are things that are up and coming. They're things that we have proven through a great deal of research at this point, what they can do. We have people in the school right now who are working on looking at the safety implications. So if we add this to your packaging, is it going to migrate into your food? Which is a really important question when we're making these novel materials, because people always want to know, is it safe for us to use all this new stuff? You know, we've had these plastic packages for a long time. There have been a number of health crises with them over time. Do we want to create the next one? No. And so we're being very careful as we're producing these to be very safe about the way that we're producing them and making sure we're doing a good variety of testing to ensure that any of the stuff we're adding to this isn't going to hurt people.
What challenges do you face in your research?
So in my research, a major challenge is replicating the way that things actually happen. In one case, we can take any of our new packaging solutions and run it through a traditional food supply chain. We can stick it on some company's truck and have it ship across the country. It's very difficult to measure then. We want the ability to replicate all of these conditions in our labs because as a packaging lab, our job is to replicate packaging reality. And my main challenge in the work that I do is figuring out what is it exactly that the commercial producers are up to and how do I replicate those systems in my work. Once I've produced a replica, if we're looking at things like biodegradable and bio-based packaging, we want to be able to do it the way that industry does it. Because if we're doing something different, then it's not going to connect to them. So can I take a novel material, produce it with traditional plastics processing equipment, the same equipment that they're using right now, can I put a new material in that and make it by those means? When we're doing food supply chain replicas, are the studies that we're doing actually replicating the conditions that are experienced in industry? Or are we doing stuff that's worse because they're better than we think? Are we doing stuff that's a little optimistic? It just depends on our approach. And so we spend a lot of time communicating with industry partners to try to figure out, what are you guys up to? How can we better simulate that? And what can we really do to contribute to making sure that this industry is becoming a better industry?
What do you think are the implications of bio-based food packaging to improve food security in both a developing and a developed country context?
So we've gotten pretty good at packaging. In terms of our ways to improve food security is mostly by improving the usage of packaging where it is necessary. And I think the advantages of packaging towards food safety and security are less tied to it being bio-based than it just being there. And making sure that we're using the technology appropriately as a method to extend shelf life where the rest of that food supply chain is being created concurrently. Because none of these innovations are going to be able to act alone. You know, it's a supply chain. You need lots and lots of actors to be working in context to make it happen. Moving away from petroleum-based resources to sustainable resources and moving from a system where trash sticks around forever to trash that we can reuse. And specifically, since we're working in a kind of a single-use system, you know, most recycling systems are only okay at doing their job. Since most packaging is just going to the landfill anyway, we may as well make it do something once it gets there. But in terms of food security, the main issue that packaging is addressing is one that any package would address, and that largely would be better answered through really educating consumers and retailers about what are these technologies, what do they do, how can I use them in my everyday life, and what is the appropriate thing to do when we hit the end of life.
What are the next steps?
So the next steps in my personal research are taking a novel packaging system that we've created and putting a food product with it and seeing how does it behave over a variety of shelf life conditions. And we're looking specifically at the food safety implications of a few different packaging choices. So if we use these novel technologies, how does it affect the safety of the product inside? So from one perspective, we're fairly certain that the technology will extend the shelf life of a food product, but does it also invite the ability for a pathogen to get in and hurt people? And I want to make sure that that's something that we check on before we make any recommendation on our material going forward.
Chris Wilson is a master's student in the School of Packaging at Michigan State University in East Lansing, Michigan, United States. Thank you so much, Chris.
Happy to be here, Ali. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. Email us at foodfixpodcast@gmail.com. The Food Fix is produced and edited by Ali Hussein and myself, Casey Wurst. Our theme music is the song Watchin' My Garden Grow by two of our favorite Michigan artists, Lindsay Liu and Josh Rocco. Funding for the podcast is provided by the Global Center for Food Systems Innovation at Michigan State University, a development lab funded by USAID. Have a great day!